Our next case this morning is Alonzo Zugs versus the United States, case number 10-3944. Mr. Ramirez.
May it please the court. My name is Mitch Ramirez. I'm a recent graduate of Notre Dame Law School, and together with my supervising attorney, Robert Palmer, we represent the appellant in this case, Alonzo Zugs. The instant case is on appeal from the district court, who dismissed Mr. Zugs' position summarily without deciding the case on its merits because they determined his 2255 motion to be second or successive. Your Honor, the issue in this case swings on this court's interpretation of 2255H of the AEDPA and 2244B, namely the meaning of what a second or successive judgment is. The court noted the need for clarification of this issue in the Certificate of Appealability. The issue of the meaning of second or successive was most recently dealt with by the Supreme Court in the case of Magwood v. Patterson. The case in Magwood involved a petitioner who obtained a death sentence from a state court, appealed his death sentence, and on remand from a 2254 motion was given another death sentence. Magwood, or the habeas petitioner in Magwood, then sought to attack his new sentence with another 2254 motion, which was denied originally, but when the case got to the Supreme Court said that it was a new judgment and therefore was not second or successive. However, the court in Magwood declined to address the specific issue in this case, which is when a petitioner files a successful 2255 or 54 motion, obtains a new sentence, and then wishes to attack not only his new sentence, but his underlying conviction in a subsequent 2254 or 55 petition, whether that might be problematic or not.
So, Mr. Ramirez, we've got controlling circuit precedent in Dollar, right on point, and Magwood says we're not changing, we're not addressing that law. So why should we don't you have to convince us, in essence, to overrule Dollar on the basis of Magwood, which didn't change it?
Your Honor, respectfully, we have other circuits that have ruled against Dollar in light of Magwood, in light of the reasoning in Magwood. For example, one case would be the Second Circuit case of Johnson. In Johnson, we have similar facts. It was a double jeopardy case. The counts was dismissed, and the sentence was vacated, and they were given a new sentence. And in that case, Johnson stated that the terms judgment and sentence should be used interchangeably because a sentence is what gives credence to a judgment. And they furthermore went on to state that when a new sentence is entered, a subsequent petition is not second or successive, regardless of whether it challenges the new sentence, the judgment, or the underlying conviction. And other courts, sorry, to go back to Johnson, more support for the contention that a sentence is a judgment and a judgment is a sentence comes from the Supreme Court decision of Burton v. Stewart from 2007, which stated that the judgment is the sentence handed down. Furthermore, other circuits have ruled similarly to Johnson, most notably the 11th Circuit in the case of Campbell. In the Campbell case, this is a direct quote from the Campbell case, the judgment to which the AEDPA applies is the underlying conviction and also the most recent sentence that authorizes the petitioner's current detention. They went on to cite this court's case in Martin v. Bartow, which stated that Magwood permitted challenges that could have been raised previously and was not limited to resentencing. Granted, Martin was a statute of limitations case. It was not a second or successive case, but it did apply to the AEDPA, and we would ask that reasoning be used here
Let me ask you, Mr. Ramirez, I thought the idea here was, in at least AEDPA, at least as I understand it, is intended to say, is designed to make sure that a state prisoner has one clean, unimpeded shot at federal habeas relief for any questions that may be presented. Magwood got rid of a rather odd obstacle in the situation where an error would never have been subject to federal review. But that's not the case we have here. Mr. Suggs had one shot to challenge the conviction and didn't take it.
Well, since Magwood, the other circuit courts have taken the reasoning in Magwood and taken that to apply to a new sentence or a new judgment. This court in Bartow also noted that a mistake that's made once, i.e. the not overturning the underlying conviction, is still a mistake the second time. And so if there was a mistake made as to Mr. Suggs' underlying conviction, that his new sentence would allow him to attack that sentence with a successive 2255 motion without needing leave of this court.
How does Magwood change any of that?
The reasoning in Magwood was that a new judgment for the is for the first time, not second or successive. And if we are to take the Second Circuit, the 11th Circuit, the 9th Circuit, then a judgment is a sentence, and a sentence is a judgment. And so since we have a new sentence here, we have a new judgment, and therefore we're allowed to have another 2255 or 54 motion.
There's not a distinction between a sentence and a conviction?
I believe that there probably is that. It seems that Magwood did not make that distinction, and that other circuits, namely the 2nd, 11th, the 9th, even the 5th, have decided that they're not going to make a distinction between those two, because a mistake made once is a mistake made twice if the underlying conviction should have been overturned.
This comes up all the time in federal criminal practice, where we can, for example, we'll remand a case for because of a sentencing error. That doesn't allow an appeal from that second sentence, a corrected sentence, to get into the issues challenging the underlying conviction.
Well, these aren't necessarily sentencing errors as much as they are. They're attacking with a habeas petition, and they're taking into light the circumstances that there was a mistake of law, and then giving a new judgment in light of that mistake of law, not necessarily a sentencing mistake.
Well, if we were to follow your logic, should we and say that the judgment is the conviction, is the sentence, it's all unified, so that if we, for example, vacate a sentence because of an error in calculating the loss amount under the sentencing guidelines, then we should, on a second appeal from the revised sentence, we ought to reconsider challenges to the trial, evidence admitted, jury instructions, et cetera, that all could have been raised in the original one.
No, sir, Your Honor. If it was a simple clerical error, like was the case in United States...
I'm not talking about a clerical error.
Okay.
A guideline error is not a clerical error.
Okay. In that case, then yes, that is, I guess, what we would be saying in this case.
Well, yeah. I thought your answer might be that implicates a different doctrine, one of waiver, and not an interpretation of the text of 2255, which we're obligated to either conform to the Supreme Court's interpretation of the parallel language in 2254 in Magwood, or find a distinction that matters.
I would agree with that, Your Honor. Thank you. I would also like to point this court to more circuit court opinions, and also point to the overriding policy that would give us a bright line here for the district courts. Wetzel was a similar decision that implicated Johnson in its reasoning, and said that the sentence is the judgment, and we should treat it as such in order to give the district courts a bright line rule in order to interpret. And I see I'm in my rebuttal time. So for these reasons, we ask that you reverse the order summarily dismissing Mr. Suggs' case and remand to the district court for an evidentiary hearing on the Brady violation.
Thank you. Mr. Horwich.
Thank you. May it please the court, I'm Ben Horwich from the Department of Justice. I represent the United States. I guess I sense, Judge Sykes, you have some concerns about the sort of textual approach that Magwood took and how we would apply that here. So I think certainly a first answer for purposes of this panel's decision can be, as Judge Hamilton suggested, that this court has precedent on this point, and the best evidence of what Magwood does or doesn't disturb is probably what the Supreme Court itself said that it decided. But even if we take this as an original matter and setting aside this court's precedent, the reasoning in Magwood has to be understood not simply in light of the section of the opinion that's talking about the fact that they are a habeas application is challenging a judgment, and here we have Section 2255 motion, which is described as attacking a sentence, but of course it's understood as attacking not only the sentence, but attacking the adjudication of guilt and anything else that may have been in violation of the Constitution and laws in the criminal proceeding. There are other parts of Magwood as well that I think the court needs to read together to understand what the Supreme Court is actually doing there. And certainly one part that seems very relevant is the fact that the Supreme Court thinks that its discussion of the relevance of a new judgment, the Supreme Court says it's not passing on the question of a case in the posture of the one here. And the way to see why that could be so is that there's a well-established practice of separating judgments, criminal judgments, into components for purposes both for appeal purposes and the mandate rule that Judge Hamilton was alluding to, and also in 2255 practice. And I would point you to the concluding lines of this court's decision in Mr. Suggs' appeal of his first 2255 motion, which is that the mandate of the court is, for these reasons, we vacate Suggs' sentence and remand for resentencing. In all other respects, the judgment of the district court is affirmed. I think that is a very standard practice of understanding that judgments have components. And the Supreme Court in Magwood did not suggest what the definition, what it was that made a judgment new. Or I don't dispute that there is a judgment here in the sense that there is a piece of paper that was entered on the district court's docket following the first 2255 motion.
But it did plainly reject, for purposes of the habeas statutes, the distinctions previously drawn between components of a judgment. That seems to be clear in the very formalist approach that the court took. You know, whatever we think Congress was driving at in the, one-shot rule that we presupposed this statutory scheme imposed, that's not how the court is reading the statute. A habeas application seeks relief from a judgment or a sentence, which in this context of 2255 incorporates the underlying judgment. Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense. And therefore, an initial attack on a new judgment is not second or successive for purposes of the bar. So the rationale and reasoning and the approach, the very formalist approach that the court took in interpreting 2254 and 2244 seems to me, when transposed onto 2255, results in an abrogation of Dollar.
I agree that the same approach applies in 2254 and 2255, but I don't think it abrogates Dollar, most obviously because the court said it wasn't deciding that question.
Well, I reserve the question, but we do have to follow its reasoning.
Well, but the reasoning that you're referring to comes in the context of rejecting an argument that Alabama was making in Magwood that is decidedly not the argument that I'm making here. The argument Alabama was making was Magwood himself could have argued a long time ago, could have raised the fair warning claim that he was pressing a second time around. And the Supreme Court said it doesn't matter that you might have had a prior opportunity to raise the claim. The question is, what are you attacking now? And our point is that when a second-in-time motion is attacking an undisturbed component of the judgment should not be understood for purposes of that second-in-time motion as being a new judgment in the way Magg would understood it. I would emphasize that the court needs to look at the stage of proceedings to which the motion before it now is directed. In Magwood, the errors were new in a very real sense that the trial court, the Alabama trial court in Magwood, had said, I'm adopting all of my prior rulings. I know we're having a resentencing, but I'm sticking by everything I decided last time. Now, that's brief, but that essentially recommits the errors that were at issue there.
How is that not the case here?
That's not the case here because the error that is asserted in Mr. Sugg's current motion is a Brady claim. And a Brady claim posits that it was a violation of due process in the context of adjudicating a person's guilt for the government to have withheld information that would be material to the defense.
How is that not embedded in the underlying conviction?
I certainly agree that still has currency, but what is more relevant is that nothing about the proceedings that followed this court's decision on the first 2255 motion did anything to disturb that aspect of the judgment. And so I think it's worth considering just by point of comparison what this case would look like if Mr. Suggs had not actually prevailed on his claim of ineffective assistance of counsel at sentencing. He would have been denied all relief on his first motion. There would be no question that the second motion would be second or successive, that it would be barred, and that this appeal would be frivolous. And so what Mr. Suggs is saying is that the fact he was granted relief on a claim in the first proceeding that is procedurally, logically, substantively unrelated to the portion of the judgment he is now attacking is nonetheless a reason for him to have an opportunity for a completely additional round of collateral review going to anything.
Right, but Magwood seems to suggest that we don't engage in that kind of a fact-bound analysis, that if there's a new judgment, you get a new habeas.
Well, what Magwood, I would point the court to the Magwood court's discussion at some length of the fact that the errors Magwood was asserting are new. So I don't.
That wasn't required for the statutory interpretation that the court did.
Well, I'm not sure why the court is discussing that point then, though. I take Your Honor's point that there are two sections, that there is a section of the opinion that reaches a conclusion. And then there's another section of the opinion that equally reaches the conclusion by reasoning related to the fact that the errors are new. And I can't deny there's some tension in that, and that's certainly what we're talking about here. But I think for this court's purposes, it would be best to take the Supreme Court at its word that it was not trying to decide the question that this court had decided in Dollar, and that's the relevant question here. I certainly think it's quite clear that if one were to apply the was it a new error portion of the opinion in Magwood, one would clearly conclude that this petition is second or successive. He's not asserting a new error. There's nothing about his resentencing that gave the district court an opportunity to commit the...
The Magwood analysis doesn't require a new error. The Magwood analysis of the statute and what second or successive means for purposes of the statute.
Well, it says it requires a new judgment, but the court does...
Error.
Well, no, I understand
or
it doesn't...
A new error that's exclusive to the new judgment.
Well, what I'm urging the court to do is to understand that Magwood does not explain what it means by new judgment. And the reason it doesn't need to explain what it means by new judgment is that it does explain that the judgment is new in the relevant respect because in Magwood's case because the errors that he is attacking in the second petition are new. What we have here, of course, is the other hypothetical. I would also point out to the court that there's a superficial simplicity to the appellant's position in that he's saying, well, you just have to decide if there's a new judgment. The trouble is that displaces the question onto figuring out what makes a judgment new. And we cited in our brief several examples, numerous examples of statutory and criminal rule-based proceedings that might be thought, I don't know, to create a new judgment. And this court would, I suppose, be in the position of deciding, are those or are those not new? And I think Judge Hamilton, I see my time has expired, if I may finish the thought, though, is Judge Hamilton, you pointed out, for example, what happens with clerical errors. And I think this court can see why that would be
me.
Particularly. I'm sorry?
I wasn't talking about clerical errors.
I'm sorry. Maybe it came up in
the talking about sentencing errors.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
Would it have been, when the case was remanded for resentencing, could the district judge have entertained a new Brady claim within the scope of our court's mandate?
No, I don't think it could have. And the same reasons of finality that are served by the mandate rule, there's a congruent set of finality considerations that Congress is trying to serve with the bar on second or successive petitions. So that is a sensible guide, I think. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Ramirez, you have 1 minute left.
Your Honors, I first just wanted to point out that the Brady violation that Mr. Suggs is raising could not have been raised before on his initial 2255 motion. The affidavit in question came after that case was decided. And I just want to sum up my argument, I would suppose. Magwood, in its judgment, said a new judgment for the first time is not second or successive. And we now have four circuit courts that have said a judgment is a sentence. And a sentence of judgment. So in a sense, what Mr. Suggs is asking of this court is to overrule Dollar and to, in light of the new decision in Magwood, to go with the other circuit courts, the sister circuit courts, to not only avoid a circuit split, but also to give the district courts a bright line rule in interpreting
a circuit split.
We've
got a circuit split.
I would say we do with Dollar. And so this, if we were to overrule Dollar, then that would take away the circuit split as it stands at this point.
Thank you. And Mr. Ramirez, you were appointed by the court, as I understand it. Thank you very much for your service to your client and to the court. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.